Hash Hash and Circle Up.
Welcome to On, the Hash House Harrier podcast for interviews, history, and stories. I'm your host, Ra.
Today on the podcast, my guest comes from the home of hashing, Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. He's been hashing around the world for over 34 years, was an organizer GM of a Pan-Asia, involved in the 2014 Brussels Beer Odyssey, and many more times. Well-known hasher, welcome, Hardy Boy.
Great, yeah.
Hardy Boy, tell us when and where and how you started hashing.
I started in Kota Kinabalu, Sabah, better known as Land Below the Ruin of Borneo in 1987. I was introduced to hash by another hasher. He was actually an artillery guy, another Major Raymond. Now, we used to sit in the officer's mess doing nothing but drinking beer till one evening Ray asked me if I'm interested in joining him for a run in the jungle. And like they say, the rest is history. And it was the K2H4, otherwise known as the Kota Kinabalu Hash House Harriers and Harriets and the Barneys. I actually started hashing with these two chapters at the same time, maybe a day or two different. It was in the same week where Raymond took me for hash in 1987.
Hardy Boy, looks like it's connected to your name. What's the origin of your hash name?
My hash name was, like you say, a spring-off or spill-off from my nerd name, which is Hardial Singh. And many of my non-hashing friends, they were already calling me Hardy, which is actually the first five alphabets of my name. They decided to call me Hardy Boy based on the television series. Those days, they used to have Hardy Boys.
Oh. Yeah. That's why I never made that connection. Yes. Were you officially named on a hash?
Yes, I was. The K2H4, the Kota Kinabalu hash.
You've traveled around the world, certainly hosted a lot of the events in Malaysia. What are some of your favorite away trips and travel hashing events you've been to?
I've been to a lot of away events. You see, in Malaysia, there are a lot of events, not for this COVID nonsense and all that, the lockdowns and all that. You find a big event every other day here, but I've been traveling overseas. My first interhash was Goa. And subsequently, I've done all the interhash. The inter-AMS hash, the one which I would say I enjoyed most, was my first inter-America hash in Panama. Subsequent to that, I've done Euro hash and a few other Indo hash and all that.
Let's talk about some other hashing traditions. Just hashing traditions you've seen around the world and there in Malaysia. Hashing started there, and some of the traditions have started other places. Have you been involved with red dress hashing? And what do you think of red dress hashing?
Yes, I've been involved in red dress hash, but most of them have been in international events. One which I enjoyed was in Brussels. The other one was at Borobudur. I think it's great. The guys do a good job. It's mainly for charity. Whatever they collect goes for charity. You have good fun running around the city. They show you around the best parts of the city, some places which you would not go on your own. What I have seen is every great restaurant has been organized very well. And talking about traditions, now it appears to me that many carols out there seem to introduce their own traditions.
Mm-hmm.
So each to its own.
Yeah.
Right? Cool. Mother Hash, yeah, for example, has its own culture.
Now, let's talk about Mother Hash. A lot of people haven't had the chance to go there. What is a hash like with Mother Hash?
From my observations, Mother Hash does not use ice during the circle. The 80th anniversary on the Monday run, they had ice, but that was out of line and not Mother's tradition. Now, Mother Hash doesn't give or use hash names. We use your real name. Sometimes they do call you by your hash name, but Mother Hash tradition is your real name. And I believe various channels or hash chapters, what we call them in Malaysia chapters, they follow their own traditions or own culture. Whatever traditions they have, I believe it is to add on to some extra fun. For me, as long as it keeps on to the main aim and culture of hash, it should be fine. In Mother Hash, whole world knows no ladies are allowed. It's a man-only chapter. To the dislike of many, they call them unmentionables.
What about live and dead hares?
after I have joined, I think I've only seen only once or twice. They have had live hares, but I would prefer a real run rather than a live hare. Because in a live hare, you don't have much of an option. If you have a normal run, then you have a chance of breaking checks and you have time to do a lot of things.
Have you ever had to have a break from hashing, or have you hashed pretty consistently since 1987?
I've not had any break. I've been hashing since 1987, except for the last 1 year. I've not done any hash. This lockdown, Mother Hash actually started running. I run with four other chapters, but I've not done any for the last 1 year because of this lockdown. I don't want to get in trouble with the authorities, and they are pretty strict about it. I'm on for the Aussie Nash Hash in November. Well, I'm waiting for the vaccine. Of course, I'm on for the Indian Nash Hash coming up also in August. I'm also registered for the Inter-America Hash, for the Euro Hash, and of course the Inter Hash. I'm on for all this. I don't know whether I'll be able to travel. I don't know whether I'll be. It depends on the international situation.
What's your guess for how many trails you've done?
Oh, interesting. From 87 till now, I would have done more than 1,000 runs. I've kept a record. It's definitely more than 1,000 runs. That, of course, includes running overseas, running with international events and all that.
But what about organizing events? You've been front and center and sometimes behind the scenes. What's been your experience organizing events?
I was the chair for the Pan Asia Hash in 2003. We had about more than 2,000 people from 40 different countries. That was held in KL, and I was the organizing chairman for that event. I was directly involved, of course, being the organizing chairman. The Interhash Chiang Mai, I was assisting a warmonger in the train from Singapore to Chiang Mai. I was directly involved in the sector from Singapore to Hat Yai. We had 400 people in that from about 30 or 40 countries. For the Pan Asia Hash, which I mentioned earlier, we had 2,000 people from 40 different countries. I was also involved a little bit with the Brussels 2014 Hash. I used to fly down to Brussels for their meetings. And in fact, I'm sure Higgins can authenticate this. There was a time when they were trying to organize a place for a meeting. And I ended up organizing a place in Brussels for them to meet. How do you like it?
Organizing events can be very rewarding with the hash, and also very frustrating and terrifying. Any horror stories, anything almost go wrong on these events behind the scenes?
No. The good thing is the events which I've been involved in, I would say thank God they have all ended up well, like the Pan Asia Hash. That was one of the best. Which at the end of the day, actually the event finished on Sunday night, and it was on Monday morning at about 3 o'clock. And I said, wow, we did it. So it's been good. Organizing the event, as we go along, we do find things happening, disagreements, quarrels and arguments and all that. But at the end of the day, for all the events that I've been involved in organizing, at the end of the day, I have not seen anything that has gone wrong. Wow. The entire group, the entire committee has put in a lot of effort. They've all been successful.
Are there people that you travel with or especially like to see on international events?
You see, we meet a lot of hash friends, and the usual ones I meet at almost every big hash events are people like Azukasi, Higgins, you yourself, Ra, Sucks to Blow, Rose, many of them, and who else? Yak Sucker, CIA, many of them I meet. And Obliques from India, Dig the Boy Wonder.
Yeah, that's a who's who of travel hashers. That's pretty good. You hash a lot in the jungle. Have you ever gotten really lost and thought you might have to spend the night there, or gotten hurt and sent to the hospital by the hash?
No, I've never got lost because being an ex-army officer, it'll be very embarrassing for me to get lost in the jungle, especially the Malaysian jungle. But I've been involved in a lot of search and rescue missions of hashes being lost. And if you want to know, there was a time one of our hashes got lost in inverted commas. I got a call that one of our hashes is missing. I didn't go for the run. So the next day I went out, I looked at the search and rescue going on, which was conducted, of course, by our grandmaster. After about an hour looking at it, I took over. I said, look, GM, let me help you out. I think I can do it. You know, Ra, we spent 2 weeks looking for this guy.
Wow. Wow.
We had more than 1,000 search going in from every angle. We had the search dogs, we had the police, we had everybody going in. After 2 weeks, we gave up. We couldn't find him. And the saddest part is, 2 years down the road, this guy surfaced.
Yeah, what happened?
He gave some excuse that he was trying to escape and run away from people. You imagine the time, the effort, the money we spent. I can't believe that I saw it with my own eyes. That there were hashers coming in, people who could not. They were contributing beers, water, food, and everything for 2 weeks, full 14 days.
Wow.
Eventually, when this guy came out and told us what happened, he has been banned from every hash in Malaysia.
Horrible. Wow. That's an amazing story, though. You have had some search and rescues which had better endings, right?
Yes. There's another one which I would like to share. This was the Hash Challenge. Hash Challenge is a 42 kilometers run. It's organized by the Petaling Hash in Malaysia. They run in a group of four, where one of four has got to be of the opposite sex. You're given a qualifying time to come. No prizes, of course. All you get is an on down. They've been doing this for many years. There was this guy from Brussels, Thomas Kuhl. I don't think so many hashers from Brussels know him, because he started hashing not in Brussels. This guy tripped, he swayed off the track and he had a fall, fatal one. It was only about 10 feet down and he passed on. It was a sad thing. We only found his body the next day. But the other hash, search and rescues, yes, we have been successful. One was this guy by the name of Kana. They call him Kana Kachil from Mother Hash. He was lost for 2 days. I was coordinating. I did not go in to search for him, but I was coordinating, and they found him on the second day.
Wow.
Actually, there are a lot of stories in Malaysia of people getting lost, missing for 7 days, 6 days, 5 days, and...
Wow. I guess they're pretty hungry and thirsty when they come out.
Oh, yes. Pretty hungry, thirsty. And usually the search and rescue party will have some food, you know, some chocolates, some drinks with them, some isotonic drinks. So the moment they find this guy, they will feed them and bring them out and put them on the ambulance and straight away send them to the hospital. And guess what happens after that? Everybody sits down there and drink for hours.
Celebration party.
Yeah.
In Malaysia, are you guys mostly setting the trail in shredded paper?
Yes, we use paper. There's been a lot of suggestions to stop using paper, because especially when you're running in urban areas, a lot of complaints, and I think the complaints are quite legitimate. You see, all the hash trails, the jungle trails have been set and found by the hashers. But then in urban areas, people come in, residents come in and start running, and then they complain that, oh, we are littering their place.
Have you ever been involved in a white powder scares? People will spot a flower set trail and call the hazmat teams. Have you ever seen anything like that happen?
Yeah, I have seen. In US, I've been many times. Even like in India, they don't use paper. Even in Europe, they use flour. India, they use kind of a chemical, like little stone-looking kind of a thing, but it just dissolves off after some time. I don't think that will work in Malaysia, because in our kind of forest, if you use flour, no times the insects and the ants will eat it up. Not sure, but I think in Panama, I saw that.
Have you had any run-ins with the police or authorities on the hash that things had to be settled down?
Yes, that happens very often here. The police usually come in and, you know, ask you, what the hell are you doing here? But they're very friendly. They're very nice. You explain to them, you tell them, look, we just had a run. We had this, we had that and all that. And they will let you off. So far, I have not heard of any hash in Malaysia being told off. Mm-hmm. But I do not know what's going to happen next in this country. But so far it's been good. Yes, the authorities, only the police who have come in, check on us. Wherever I am, I always get away, because I go up to them and identify myself. And they say, oh, okay, all right, sir, you guys get going soon. That's it. I believe all the other chapters, the same thing. Just go there and talk to them nicely. They will not disturb you. So far, so good in Malaysia.
But what's your experience with some of the legends of hashing that came out of Malaysia or have been around forever? People like Tumbling Bill and Drain Oil and Chibai.
Yeah, I know Tumbling Bill. He was a great guy. I miss him. I had some good times with him. He was a member of the Royal Salmon Club Hash, of which I am a member as well. course, he was a member of Mother Hash. When I organized the last Spanish Hash, he was my mentor. He advised me what to do and how to do. Talking about Yurin, I had a good encounter with him, a good meetup with him at the Belgium 2014 Bay of Desi. Talking about Chimba, yes. Of course, great guy. One of the guys who have done all the interhash. He started telling the hazards and the animals. Mm-hmm. Yep. And of course, there are many others.
What about the Hash Heritage Foundation?
What I can say is the guys, Chris Boyd and Chris Tan and the entire committee, they are working really hard on it. They have got some obstacles along the way. I think they have reached the end. They are about to start some construction. Probably not what they have planned for due to financial constraint. They, as far as I know, they are about to start something, some construction. They got the land many years back. They've been going on. Yeah, some people have been saying that they are dragging their feet. Yes, they were slow. But I think they are working very hard on it. That's all I can say about it. I have been attending their meetings. All I know is they are doing a good job.
There's another big effort you're involved in. I'd like to ask you about Neptunus and the Hash House Harriers Museum that he created had to shut down in Holland, and you got involved to help Neptunus. Tell us about that.
That's interesting. When I saw on the WhatsApp chat Neptunus having that problem that he's got to shut down and relocate, so I sent him a personal message and asked him, I said, hey, look, you were planning to move to Malaysia. He came online and said, yes, can you find a place? So right now, what we have got, I've got a place for him. We have moved all his stock, lock, stock and barrel to Malaysia. They are lying in place where I got for him. He's supposed to be down here in March for 3 months to set it up. But as we all know that we can't travel, we can't move around. We are waiting for him. We are waiting for Neptunus to come down. And when he comes up, we will help to set it up. He has moved all his things. I've helped him. I've located a place. I've given him a place here. And that's what I've done.
That's appropriate that the Hash Museum is in Malaysia.
We hope eventually that this will move to the Hash Heritage House. It'll be nice if it moves there. The Hash Heritage Committee, I'm sure they are willing to accommodate. They have indicated that they will only look into it once their building is ready. I think that's fair.
Sure.
They have got their hands full.
Yeah, so fortunately you guys will keep it alive and operating until that can be an option.
Yeah, certainly. I've got a lot of friends here. In fact, the guys who helped me to offload the entire container full, they have a lot of ideas, but we have to wait for the boss. And the boss is Neptunus. So when he comes, he will decide. And if he feels that he wants another location, we will help him to find that.
Of course, you started hashing in Asia, America, North America. You've been to Africa, Europe, to Australia, or all the continents. Have you been to South America? Is that one on your list?
I've been to Africa. I've been to Australia. Yes, America.
Is there any other place when all travel wide opens up? Is there any place left on your list to say, oh, there's one more place I got to get to hash?
I would like to explore more of Africa, more of Middle East. I've never been there. I've heard so much. Not sure whether it's safe to go there and hash, but of course, check back with Hajukasi. He says, yeah, everything is all right. You know, he's traveled so widely, so he knows he's the right man to go and ask.
Hasher will go anywhere, and certainly one person traveling on their own, it's a lot simpler. Now, hashing is a big deal and very well known in Malaysia. In other parts of the world, it is sort of under the radar. But do you think with the changing world, changing technology, that the hash will survive worldwide?
Yes. You see, hash is something, once you get involved in it, for me and for many other friends I know, it might be your working day when the clock hits 4 p.m., you just drop your pen and you just switch off everything and you want to go. This is for people who have been involved in hash, because when you go out there, you do a good run, you sweat out, curse the hair for setting a screwed up run, or you curse the hair for setting a difficult run. But when you come back in Malaysia, you know, we shower and we wash up, not in other countries. But when you sit down there and have a beer and you look up, you say, wow, this is what life is. Like in Malaysia, you know, you sit in the all palm estate, in the rubber estates, or in the jungle fringe and all that, and you said, wow, this is nice. For me, I don't think so hash will ever end. It will go on. But of course, we have to get used to the restrictions. Like in Malaysia, we are not so used to running in urban areas. We are not so used to running with restrictions about drink driving and all that. These things are setting in. We will get used to it, like what you guys do in your country, drink driving and all that. These problems are setting in here. But it will continue. Hash will survive. Hash will go a long way. In fact, there will be a lot of changes. Like, you know, people have their own culture, own traditions and all that, their own ways. In Malaysia, they have already started hash chapters. They have Sunday runs. They have breakfast runs. They have hitchhiking and all that over and above their normal runs. It will continue.
I certainly enjoyed hashing in KL and in Malaysia when the run finishes and there's giant buckets of water to wash off all the mud and get the leeches off, and then you feel really good to enjoy the on after.
The other one I would like to mention is about Shali Chandran.
Yeah.
He was also known as Dynamite. He was the MC for InterHash Goa. This guy actually taught me how to set Ole Pup Crawl Trails. And I learned a lot from him. Charlie Chandran has passed on, but he's one guy I have never forgotten. I would like to make mention about him. This guy, besides his name being Dynamite, he was really a dynamite. He was a frontrunner. He was the on-set for Mother Hash at one time. He taught me how to set pup crawls. And after his passing, I would have probably had more than 20 or 25 pup crawls since then. For the KL Full Moon, for the Royal Slammer Club Hash.
And you think of Charlie Dynamite every time you do it, I'm sure. He was a great guy.
Yeah, certainly.
He had a tragic death. It was not long after Goa InterHash. Well missed and well loved by many people. That's a nice tribute.
Yes, certainly.
Okay, Hardy Boy, one last question. Is the RA always right?
Yes. As far as I'm concerned, the RA is always right. And I'll tell you why the RA is always right. Why do you have the RA? To charge people, he does the whip or the bomo in Malaysia, as we call him. People want to have a good time. People want to laugh. People want to enjoy. They want to forget about the day. So the RA, he does good things. He does silly things. He does stupid things. He does everything. He calls people up, charge them for a lot of things and all that. He does all that to add some fun to the hash. He adds romance to the hash. Right? What I call the hash romance. He wants to have fun. Everybody sits there, and you know, when we have the WIB international events, we have the circle. The fun starts when the RA comes on board. That's when people start enjoying the circle. That's when people start laughing and having fun. It's a bunch of adults having fun, and the RA is the master. So he leads the fun. He makes you forget about everything that you have done for the day. He makes you forget about all the wrong things that have happened. So I would say the RA is always right for the good of the hash.
Hardy Boy, I'm glad I'm part of the hashing family with you. It's been great to talk to you.
Thank you.
And is there anything you did to prepare for this interview? Specifically whiskey.
Oh, the whiskey. Since I started talking to you, I had another three more. So besides beer, whiskey is my favorite drink. I think I'm on my 10th one now.
So do you recommend that people come on the podcast, have a drink first?
Oh, yes, certainly. Yes. You know what? Otherwise, you're not a hasher.
Yeah,
on.
I want to thank Hardy Boy for dropping in the podcast from Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, home of hashing. This is the On Podcast. Stay tuned for more episodes every week. Until next time, On. This is Ra.
To close the circle, here's the hash anthem sung by Mother Hash.
Swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me. Swing low, sweet.